And Cory Booker is not the only one excited about March Madness. NPR correspondent Mike Pesca joins us now from our bureau in New York. He's going to be attending those games in Newark. And Mike, always nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me on.
And you're going to get to see, as the mayor mentioned, the number one, Ohio State.
Yeah, and I know that Cory Booker sometimes is compared to Barack Obama, and I've actually covered both of them. Now, Barack Obama picked four number ones in his Final Four, and there you heard Cory Booker just pick three number one seeds in his Final Four. So maybe the comparison is apt.
And it's going to be Ohio State against Kentucky there in the men's Sweet 16 in Newark. Also, Marquette, something of a dark horse, against North Carolina.
Yes, and I am very intrigued by a couple of things about Marquette. They have a great coach, Buzz Williams, who asked him a question at a press conference. He might go on for 15 minutes, but it'll be a captivating 15 minutes. And they play a great offense where no one really has positions, but the deficit of their team is their defense, and the University of North Carolina has great athletic players. So that both those games should be good games. I mean, there are a lot of really intriguing Sweet 16 games around the country.
As we look on the other parts of the bracket, three of the four number one seeds have made it through to this round in the men's side.
Right, and so that's why Cory Booker didn't pick all four number one seeds to advance. And the exception is Pittsburgh. They lost that game I was at, also in Washington, D.C. And Butler, the number eight seed, will be facing Wisconsin. Now, in that bracket, except for this is the Southeast, and they'll be playing their games in New Orleans, except for Pittsburgh, everyone else really held serve. So the 2, 3, and 4 seeds are in the regional semifinals, it would be called. But I think Butler might be, they're not technically the favorite in Las Vegas, but I would give them absolutely as equal a chance as Wisconsin or the winner of the game between BYU and Florida. I'm also really interested to see how BYU does. Like a lot of people, I had thought that the exclusion of their great post player, Brandon Davies, and he was kicked off the team for violating the school's honor code, I thought that would really hurt BYU because they have no inside presence, but they have just about the best guard in the country in Jimmer Fredette, the best college guard. Mm-hmm. So I thought they might fall apart, and a lot of people did too, but they've been fantastic in their first two games. We'll see how they do against Florida. We'll see if they win that game, if they could make the Final Four. And if they do, I mean, I was talking to a friend who considers himself a basketball fan but not an NCAA fan, and he said, I think I could name two guys in college basketball, Kemba Walker and Jimmer Fredette. And both those guys, Kemba Walker of UConn, Jimmer Fredette of BYU, are in it. And I think those guys are the types that could really captivate the public's attention.
And the one bracket we haven't talked about is in the Southwest, where there you have the real Cinderellas.
Yes, except for Kansas, the number one team. Every other team in that bracket is a double-digit seed. So Richmond, the 12 seed, they're going to be playing Kansas. Then another school from Richmond, and it's important to note that the city of Richmond has as many teams in the Sweet 16 as the entire Big East Conference, which is kind of impressive. Virginia Commonwealth is there. They're playing Florida State. What an interesting game that should be. Florida State has this great defense. They have Bernard James, who was in the Air Force. He's 26 years old. He's big and physical, and he's mature, both literally, but also being, you know, a sergeant in the Air Force. He brings a lot of leadership to that Florida State team, and they weren't supposed to win either of their first two games. But then you have Virginia Commonwealth, the team that people were criticizing their very existence in the tournament, and they shredded a Purdue defense, and Purdue has a great defense, and Virginia Commonwealth put up 91 points against them, I think, 90-something points. Mm-hmm. And the coach of Virginia Commonwealth is one of the most sought-after guys now. His name is Shaka Smart, and he lives up to that name. He has a book-length list of famous quotations. And I was going through some, it's up to like 115 pages now. And he inspires the kids with quotations. He inspires himself with quotations. I was going through some of these quotations, and a couple of them were really good. And my son, he's going to be 4 soon. So soon I'm going to start telling him this one. First, we make our habits, then our habits make us. I love that.
On the other side, Kansas, the number one seed in that bracket, takes on the Richmond Spiders. I think that's one of the great nicknames in college sports.
Yes, and their actual logo is not one of these cute, cuddly, let's put it in a kid's bedroom spiders. It's like a real arachnid. So it's pretty intimidating. Kansas looks great. They have the Morris brothers who are going to be NBA players. The team is, stocked with NBA players to the point where earlier in this year, if there was any tension or controversy around Kansas, and this is one of those teams where it's so covered, it really is the professional professional team in their state. One of the players let out that there were so many good players, there were almost too many options to choose from. And that was you know, deemed one of these criticizing the team type comments. But it's not a criticism. It's saying that they are so loaded with players, the challenge is to, you know, get the ball in every one of these kids' hands who could score. So this is why most people, also by judging from the first two games, are saying that Kansas and Ohio State have the best chance to make the Final Four, and Duke is the other number one seed, and we haven't talked about them too much. They're a very good team. They're always very well coached. The X factor there is Kyrie Irving, who hurt his toe on December 4th. Kyrie Irving is a freshman. If he goes pro next year, he will definitely be in the top five NBA selections, but he's only played 9 or 10 games, and Duke has been trying to incorporate him in during the tournament. So that will Mike Krzyzewski's a great coach. He's never really had to do this, kind of allot minutes to a guy who hasn't played and doing it to a team that is a number one seed anyway. So in the first game, it looked like Kyrie Irving, you know, he contributed well. They were blowing out Hampton. But in the second game against Michigan, things didn't go as well, and maybe there was some criticism of how Krzyzewski used Kyrie Irving in that game. We'll see how Irving, Nolan Smith, the Plumlee brothers, all the rest of the Duke players play against Arizona in their game in Anaheim.
We are talking with NPR correspondent Mike Pesca, not his father, Joe. We're talking about the Sweet 16s. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to the women's tournament now. And all four of the number one seeds are through there. A lot of chalk on the women's side, but it's considered wide open this year because the University of Connecticut actually lost a game.
Yes, they lost a game to Stanford, who is another number one seed. It is interesting. It's not just chalk, which is, you know, the word for when the favorites survive. I was looking at the ESPN prognosticators, their experts, and everyone before the tournament starts play picks their Final Four. And if you look at experts from the men's side, you'll see a great variation of which teams would play, of course, biased towards the top seeds. So there are five experts picking games from ESPN. That means they have 20 teams, 20 slots for a team to make the Final Four, and 19 of the 20 were the same. And I think one of the experts picked Notre Dame to be the only non-number one seed to make the Final Four. So you have Connecticut, who lost one game, is perhaps more vulnerable than in the last couple of years.
A little thinner than usual.
Yes, it doesn't mean they're not the best team in the country, but they lost one game. Then you had Stanford, the team that beat UConn. Then you have Baylor with the Brittany Griner, who is a captivating and interesting and almost the Wilt Chamberlain of women's basketball. They might have to change some rules around her. She's dunked in a game, fairly rare in women's basketball. And then the fourth number one seed is Tennessee, Connecticut's longtime rival, Pat Summitt, a great coach. And right now it's looking that all four of those teams could make the Final Four, which would be really what women's basketball fans want.
And I think every women's basketball fans, except perhaps those at Georgetown and Ohio State, would like to see Tennessee and Connecticut face off in the semifinal.
This was a rivalry that was, the plug was pulled on the rivalry when Pat Summitt, well, they blame each other, but these two coaches...
Blame each other? They detest each other.
But they blame each other about why they don't play during the regular season. They really don't like each other. They have different styles, although you could argue they have very similar styles in that they're both headstrong generals in maybe slightly different molds. So the teams don't play during the regular season now, so we have to wait for the tournament for the teams to play, and this is the matchup that everyone wants to see because Tennessee was so good that it was for a while there in the late 80s, or actually through the 90s and the early aughts, it was the Tennessee Volunteers and women's basketball, almost in that order. Now it's become the UConn women and the rest of women's basketball. So UConn is the better team or better ranked team. They have the better record this year, but it will be a clash of dynasties.
Well, as long as we're talking Jersey pride, let's not forget the days of Montclair State and Clara Blazejowski, who still owns the single game scoring record at Madison Square Garden. But anyway, I did want to point out that there was an interesting game in the first round of the tournament. Gino Auriemma of Connecticut facing off against his former star guard, Jen Rosati, now the coach at Hartford, right up the road from Storrs, Connecticut. You'd have thought that Auriemma might give his former star player a break.
You don't know Auriemma then. The break he gives them is to give them a lot of experience, and a lot of his former players are coupler, Shea Ralph, is an assistant on his team, and some of the others have gone out into the world, and there are head coaches and assistant coaches now. Hartford plays Connecticut during the season, and one of the, aside from a talent advantage, UConn was playing on its home court. I guess Hartford was pretty much too, but there is an odd thing in the women's tournament where in the first couple of rounds, teams play on other teams' home court, and it doesn't always go by who's the higher-ranked team. So Gonzaga was an 11 seed, but they were playing on their home court because their school bid for the tournament and put up money, and they hoped their team would make it because it's possible that a school could say, we'll host a tournament game, and then their school doesn't even make the tournament, and in those cases, the schools wind up losing money. So Gonzaga had the advantage of a home court, even though they were only an 11 seed, and they won their games. Utah had a home court advantage, but as a 15 seed, they were not able to win their games. Some number one seeds play on their home court, like Tennessee, and some do not, like Ohio State.
Mike Pesca, thanks very much for your time. Have a great time this weekend in Newark.
Yes, thank you.
NPR correspondent Mike Pesca joined us from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow, with Japan's struggle to contain its overheated reactors, Germany now says it'll pull the plug on nuclear power. Could that ever happen in the United States? Jennifer Ludden will be here to talk about what a future without nuclear energy might be like. I'm Neil Cunnan. We'll see you again on Monday. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.